Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, we talk about the launch of another podcast, Gavin Newsom's podcast called This Is Gavin Newsom. His first guest was Charlie Kirk, the conservative commentator. He is our first guest this week. His first interview since that interview was released, learning the backstory behind it, his analysis of what it felt like, what he thinks of Newsom as a presidential candidate, plus his nationwide tour of college campuses, where he interacts with people, some supporters, some not. It stopped at Cal State Northridge this week, and we talked to him about that. We also talk later with the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Scott Turner. More on that in a moment, but let's start with Charlie Kirk and his first reaction to that Newsom podcast.
Congratulations on the podcast with Gavin Newsom.
Well,
incredible response. Everybody seems to be talking about this thing. What's your big takeaway from it?
Well, yeah, first, you know, appreciated the conversation and to be invited there. Look, it was really interesting. It was obvious that the governor wants to move to the middle on a lot of the political issues that the Democrat Party has been on the unpopular side of. The one that's making the most headlines, obviously, is biological men in women's sports. And he said he totally agrees with me, and that's a direct quote.
Were you surprised by that?
I was a little taken aback. I anticipate a little bit more of a political politician answer. You could kind of see that laced in, but then he just bluntly said, look, I agree with you. It's about fairness. He's already receiving a lot of backlash by local leaders here in California for that position. And we'll see if he actually follows up that rhetoric with action, like an executive order or trying to champion the state bill that will prohibit biological men in women's sports. But the reaction so far has been quite promising.
Well, let's talk about that backlash. Scott Wiener, who is a state senator from California,
called you a
vile bigot. He said what Newsom said was profoundly disturbing. He says it creates a fake moral panic. California Legislative LGBTQ Caucus says it was profoundly sickened and frustrated by what the governor said. How do you respond to that?
I've gone back and forth with Mr. Wiener on Twitter or X quite often. Look, I don't have to respond or justify his attacks towards me. I will say, though, that 80% of Americans want to see youth sports in general, but all sports where biological men are not competing with women's competing in women's spaces or in women's sports. But look, he can name call all he wants, but I think his problem is actually with his governor, and I'm kind of see how they reconcile this. Right? I mean, look, he can go back and forth with me. I'm not the governor of this state.
Yeah.
His own governor has actually decided to moderate on the position, at least in rhetoric. We'll see if it comes in action. And I think it's very interesting that at this moment where the Democrats are kind of in the wilderness, they're looking for their own political leader, seems as if Governor Newsom wants to try to position him as the moderate. I think he's been a total failure as governor. We could talk about that if you'd like. But at the very least, from a rhetorical standpoint, he's starting to say things that would make the Democrat Party more palatable to the rest of the country.
What's the backstory on this podcast? How did you get involved in this?
I got a phone call from Governor Newsom 2 weeks ago.
He called himself.
That's right, yeah. Connected through Kimberly Guilfoyle. Obviously, you know, they have a shared past, yeah.
That's who connected you to?
Well, I mean,
Kimberly Guilfoyle?
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, so,
his ex-wife, of course.
Yeah, so shared past. And I know KG, as we call her, who's now going to be the ambassador to Greece through Trump World. And I talked to the governor. He said, hey, I'm doing this podcast. I want to have you on. Would you like to come on? I said, yeah, I'll talk to anybody anytime. It's kind of my whole shtick. I'll do this on a college campus. So we went out to his podcast studio and we said, hey, let's talk about anything, you know, keep it civil, which I think we did a good job of that. And then I tried to press and challenge him on some of the core failures that I would say that he is responsible for here in California, such as homelessness and crime and poverty rate and wealth inequality. And he obviously has some, you know, tailored responses to that. But yeah, that's the backstory.
Did he change your view of him at all?
I mean, my view of him is actually the same, which is this is a guy that wants to be president more than any other human being, I think, currently alive. And I think he's willing to do
what he says not, but
well, yeah,
most
I mean,
people
like,
don't believe that.
I mean, not every governor in the country has a podcast and inviting, you know, MAGA faithful. Again, I'm not a mind reader. I can only kind of see where he's going. And it looks as if he's trying to be on the popular edge or the popular side of the issues right now. I don't know the man personally. I do think he's done destructive things to this beautiful state, a state that I love, and he's gonna have to explain that, and the voters overwhelmingly across the country think negatively of it. But I will say this, credit to him. The positive thing I will say, credit to him for being willing to have a conversation, be willing to have dialogue. I wish more people on the left to be willing to do so.
What do you think of him as a presidential candidate? Do you think he's the strongest Democrat?
I mean, I don't even know what the field would look like. I would say this though, that he at least has some self-awareness. He didn't say this to me, but I think he at least has some self-awareness that the rest of the country thinks so negatively about the California experiment. If you were to go into Pennsylvania, and say that I'm a governor of California, you're dealing from like a 20-point disadvantage. Mm. People think of the state very negatively. I think that perception is reality. He does not. And so if he were to run for the presidency in 2028, he's going to have to try to rebrand himself. And I think this podcast is his attempt to do that.
What do you think is his biggest failure here?
Oh, well, I would go to price of housing, right? Second highest in the country, $850,000 on average. Highest is Hawaii, California is number two. Wealth inequality is the least equal when it comes to wealth and income inequality in the country. Homelessness, obviously, one in three of all homeless in the country live in the state of California, leading the country in homelessness. And then also cost of living, the highest cost of living of any in the country.
Which he admitted was a
huge problem. Yeah. And then I, you know, tried to respectfully and forcefully rebuke, like, hey, you guys control everything, you being the Democrats, right? Supermajority in the House, supermajority in the Senate, Secretary of State, Attorney General, Governor, Lieutenant Governor. You can't like blame MAGA Republicans for this. At some point, there has to be a reckoning with your ideas. Also, outward migration, he has, you know, a slippery response to that. The facts are the facts. Yeah. California is decreasing in population for the first time in nearly 40 years.
Although the population went up last year after years of it declining, but we don't even
know that. That is true, yeah. And you have to wonder how much of that is immigration from another country versus other states.
So let's talk about why we're here. So we're here on CSUN campus. You were just at USC earlier this week. You're going all around. Talk about the moment when you first walk up and the crowd sees you. What goes through your mind?
Well,
what that's like?
It depends what campus. I have no idea how we're going to be received or welcomed here. I will say, look, it's humbling. It's overwhelming to kind of see so many students willing to express conservative opinions and beliefs. I have no idea what we're going to receive here. It could be wonderful. It could be somewhere in the middle. It could be negative. But we've really helped build a movement of young people across the country that are patriotic, that love the nation, that believe in freedom and liberty, and want to keep fighting for their country.
What's the biggest thing that people are talking to you about? Because they come up to you, they can kind of ask you anything.
Yes.
What's the big thing?
It's different than the fall. I would say there's a lot of questions about, hey, what is Doge doing? What do you think of Trump? Still, at least amongst our rank and file, overwhelmingly supportive of the president and his agenda. I'll probably get some Israel questions here because there's some Israel-Palestinian protesters happening out here, so we'll probably deal with that. Issues around freedom of speech, culture, trans issues come up. It's a lot of the culture stuff more so than anything else is usually surfaced.
You help organize young people to be more conservative. And we have seen an incredible growth, thanks in part to some of your work, in terms of young people voting for Trump, especially young men voting for Trump. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I did my best to explain this on the podcast with Governor Newsom. A couple things that you could look at. The immigration issue is really motivating a lot of people to ask the question, does our government work for us or does it work for those of foreign countries that come to our nation? Number two, the trans issue is really kind of an affront to our senses, especially when it comes to sports and locker room access. And finally, the biggest one is quality of life. That under the 4 years of Democrats, that thankfully that has now just changed, there was this kind of feeling that we were losing the American dream, that you can't buy a home, you got to rent for the rest of your life, that there's nothing we can do about the porous open border, that, you know, even though crime is happening in your community or break-ins or burglaries, that you just have to kind of get used to it. The Republican response, the America First response, is we can get back the country that you once grew up in.
And in terms of sort of where we all go from here, what do you think is another big issue, I should say, another big issue is cost in terms of cost of living is tariffs. Do you think tariffs are going to reduce the cost of living?
I mean, it could if it makes investment come back to the country. Look, we're not sure how this whole story is going to play out. I will say the reciprocal tariff policy the president is putting forward, I support completely. That if another country is tariffing us, that we should at least try to counterbalance that. The American people overwhelmingly voted in favor of tariffs. I think the president is going to go about this with great prudence and great judgment. If it starts raising prices, then I think he'll claw it back a little bit. However, the goal is to try to incentivize more domestic manufacturing and production and investment.
Another place where prices could potentially rise is if Medicaid is cut. That could happen with the budget that's being put forward. Are you concerned about that?
Not too much, at least from what I can understand, without getting too deep into the policy debate. At least what Speaker Johnson, Elon Musk, and the president are saying is that they want to try to make it more efficient, try to find any fraud in the system, make sure people who are on the lower income ladder are able to have social assistance and help. But no, I don't have great concerns about that.
And we'll wrap things up doing something called personal issues, which
okay.
is a quick, fun, cultural stuff
right.
to get to know you a little bit better, okay? So, Charlie Kirk, what is your favorite TV show right now?
Seinfeld. But it's not right now. I mean, it's
that's
kind
okay.
of...
okay. All time. That's good. It's on in reruns.
There you go.
Including on one of our stations. So we'll
not that
take
there's
it.
Anything wrong with it.
Yeah, there you go. Favorite movie?
All-time movie?
Yeah.
I'd have to say Godfather.
Great choice. Favorite athlete of all time?
Oh, Michael Jordan.
All right.
I grew up in Chicago.
There you go. Favorite book?
Other than the Bible, I'd have to say Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl.
What's your favorite way to relax?
I like saunas.
Okay.
I'm a big sauna fan.
And Charlie Kirk, who was your role model?
My role model growing up would probably be my father, would probably be the people in my community. And then political role model, there's so many people to choose from. But I'd say Foster Freeze, who passed away in recent years.
And he helped to fund a lot of
what exactly
you did,
right? Yeah, that's exactly. One of our first donors,
What did he teach you?
He really told me the importance of the golden rule, treat other people the way you want to be treated. And he was the most generous individual, obviously being a donor to us. He had an amazing thing when, right, his 70th birthday, he brought 70 of his friends, came in and he said, hey, welcome to my 70th birthday. I'm giving you all $1 million to give to the charity of your choice. That was his birthday. He threw his own birthday,
awesome.
Giving $70 million away to each million person. So it's just amazing, over-the-top generosity. Great lesson.
And I know Trump is a role model for you too. I know
Without
you talk
a doubt.
To
yes.
him a couple times a week. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest thing he's taught you?
Never give up. No matter if the world is against you and you feel as if everything's crashing along, you know, alongside, never give up, believe in yourself, and amazing things can happen.
Charlie Kirk, thanks
Thank
so,
you
much
so much
for talking with us.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Absolutely.
Congratulations on
Thank
your
you.
Success.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Charlie Kirk and the folks at CSUN for having us there. Now we take you to South LA to a place called Sola Impact. Which builds modular housing as a potential solution to some of the California homelessness crisis. We met up for the first time with the Secretary of Health and Human Services. His name is Scott Turner. He grew up in Texas. He actually became an NFL football player, playing for the Washington Redskins, the San Diego Chargers, and the Denver Broncos. He became a pastor after football, spent some time in politics in the Texas state legislature. Had worked for then Secretary Ben Carson when he was Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, helped create this Opportunity Zones program to invest in communities, and is now getting to oversee the whole thing as the Secretary of Housing. One of those Opportunity Zones is South LA, the Watts area, which is where we met up with him, where Sola is located. Went on a tour there. We also were with him as he visited Altadena, where he is working on the federal response to the Eaton fire. We talked about all of that with him in this in-depth sit-down. Here is the Secretary.
Secretary Turner, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time. Welcome to Southern California. Good
Thank
to have you.
You
here.
Thanks for having me.
So we are in what's called an Opportunity Zone, which you helped to create that concept. For people that don't understand what that is, what is an Opportunity Zone?
Well, thank you for having me. So Opportunity Zones came about as a result of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is the big tax overhaul legislation that President Trump signed into law in his first term. Senator Tim Scott, who was the lead senator and legislator on Opportunity Zones, and the president, they were asking the question, you know, what can be done for these communities in America where the forgotten people are living, where investment hasn't been made in decades? Mm-hmm. And we all are familiar with those types of neighborhoods, be it rural, tribal, and urban. Mm-hmm. And so Opportunity Zones were created. Every governor, every tribal leader, and every territory leader was tasked with nominating 25% of eligible census tracts. Mm-hmm. And the Department of Treasury certified them for 10 years, and there's 8,764 Opportunity Zones, so neighborhoods. The spirit of the law is economic development and community development. And so there's a capital gains incentive from a tax perspective that brought in private capital. Mm-hmm. So people who had realized the capital gain from the sale of an asset, if you will, a stock, a property, could then invest in a qualified opportunity zone fund and use it as a vehicle to build new housing, to build new operating businesses. And these are some of the most distressed, under-resourced communities in America. Mm-hmm. And so Alex, as a result, $84 billion have been invested of private capital in the opportunity zones. A million people got lifted off of poverty. Mm-hmm. Housing values went up, salaries went up, and so Opportunity Zones have been very impactful.
So you helped to create this in the first administration. Mm-hmm. Now you're helping to run the whole thing as the secretary. Mm-hmm. Here we are at Sola. Yes. You just got a tour around an impressive spot here. Mm-hmm. What was the big takeaway from checking out how they build housing here that you think could be applied more broadly to the rest of the country?
So yes, you're right. We're here at Sola Impact, which was one of the first campuses, a business campus in an Opportunity Zone. Martin Muuto, who is my great friend, he was the founder and the CEO of Sola. And now we're at Model Z, which is a manufacturing facility where they create affordable housing, units to be used for people across LA County, hopefully across the nation. They're affordable houses, one bedroom units that are very clean, they're modern, and they're all built right here in this factory, which is in the Opportunity Zone.
I mean, is this something the federal government's gonna invest in more?
Well, you know what we're working on now, and you know, so my desire, my hope in working with Congress and other agencies is the expansion and the continuation of Opportunity Zones. They're set to sunset in December of 2026, but I am very hopeful that we'll expand them. And so now investors and people across America, families, individuals will have an opportunity for the American dream when it comes to home ownership and starting new businesses.
You know, here in California, mm-hmm. one of our biggest issues is homelessness.
Yes.
The problem has continued to get worse. Mm-hmm. What's going to be the biggest difference now in the Trump administration for people when it comes to homelessness? Is there going to be a big change on the federal level to try to help this state?
Well, you know, homelessness is a crisis in our country, but in particularly here in California. Homelessness in California has gone up 44%, I believe, over the last 5 years, and it, with record funding. And so there has to be better management. There has to be better, not just care, but public-private partnerships, working with faith-based organizations, recognizing that there's people in the private sector and people in faith-based organizations like Union Rescue Mission, like the Dream Center, that are doing this on a daily basis and have tremendous results. And so if you think about, you know, the American people spoke. President Trump got 77 million votes, and really I think he flipped 10 counties in California because the people saw that he cares about the issues that impact California, like homelessness. So to your point and your question, yes, we recognize it. Yes, we're going to be on top of it, and we're going to help and work with our federal and local partners to eradicate homelessness in our cities.
But is there a specific policy change that's coming?
Mm-hmm. So homelessness, when you look at this, when I talked about engaging the nonprofits, nonprofits around our country as it pertains to homelessness have been doing a tremendous job. And because of that, we have to do a better job of bringing them in, not here just in LA County or in Los Angeles, but around our country. At HUD, we actually have that in our purview as homelessness. And we understand, you know, last year in December, to your point, the Point in Time report came out, over 770,000 people in our country were homeless on one single night in January of 2024 in the middle of winter. Many of those included families. Mm-hmm. And this is regardless of the record funding that was coming from HUD. And so there has to be a paradigm shift.
Right.
It's not the money. It's the stewardship, and it's the engagement, and it's the management of it. So those things will absolutely get better.
You talk about nonprofits. You visited one of my personal favorites, which
yes.
is the Dream Center in Hollywood. They have people come in there. They live there, many of them suffering from substance abuse. They mm-hmm. get them cleaned up.
Yes.
They get them trained for jobs. And there's a faith-based component
yes.
of that. I know you prayed with them
yes.
On the campus. What was your takeaway from the Dream Center?
I was blown away by the leadership there. Mr. Barnett.
Pastor
and,
Matthew
you know,
Barnett.
He and his father 30 years ago had a dream to serve the people of LA. And here we are 30 years later, and they serve 700 people a day that just live there. They feed people, they disciple people, they pray for people, they take people in. We heard two powerful testimonies yesterday, one from a young lady and one from a young man who have both been from totally different backgrounds, but had struggles. And the Dream Center took them in, and now they're on their way to graduating here in a few weeks from the program, and on their way to have to live in a life of self-sustainability and thriving and have a relationship with Christ and have a community of people. And so the Dream Center, I wish everybody could see the Dream Center and what they're doing and how they serve one person at a time so that they can not only get out of the Dream Center, but really thrive as individuals.
Do you think the federal government should invest more in models like that?
You know, I love private sector. I think that the federal government can be a facilitator and a partner. But what I've seen and what I've experienced is that when faith-based organizations and private sector partners come along, there's no barriers, there's no strings. And I've seen great results in that because I'm part of one in Dallas. And so the federal government, as I said, is a great convener and a great partner, but the solution, I believe, is in the private and nonprofit sector.
You're a pastor, a
yes.
great preacher yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about how your faith informs the way you look at this job.
Well, you know, HUD is a very unique place because we have housing. Housing touches every family in America. Housing is not political. Housing is necessary. And so when I look at HUD, you know, when I interview people to come to HUD, I say, why do you want to be at HUD? Because I want to hear people's heart. The people that are at HUD, myself, our team, we have a heart for people. We have a heart for people to thrive, not to just to survive. And so my faith in Christ, and not only does it inform me, but it encourages me, it challenges me, it drives me to lay my life down for others. You know, the Bible says that Jesus didn't come to be served, but he came to serve. Mm. And that's what HUD is. We're servant leaders to the people of America.
You know, we need a lot of help in terms of our fire zones right now. I know during this week you visited both Pacific Palisades and Altadena.
Yes.
A lot of people have seen it on TV. Seeing it up close, how is it different maybe? Or what
it's devastating.
Think? Yeah.
It's devastating to see the tragedy of the fires that swept through the Palisades and Altadena. And it's heartbreaking. But I don't stop there, because I did get to meet with the families. I get to meet with business owners and pastors and rabbis and parents of children that went to the schools that burnt down. The resolve and the resilience of the people in these two communities is very encouraging. Even in the midst of devastation, there's hope. And I want to say that, and I want to emphasize that, because it's that hope and that encouragement, these communities coming together, that is really going to allow them to thrive and rebuild. There's a lot of work to do, but I believe that it will get done.
You know, HUD could potentially do low interest or no interest loans for people to help them rebuild. Is that something you're considering?
Well, you know what we did today? We announced a 90-day extension on a foreclosure moratorium to give families that have an FHA-insured mortgage that are in the disaster areas, to give them more flexibility, to give them time to think about their strategies. And so that's one thing that HUD has done. We will continue to look at our programming. Obviously, you know, Congress has a say and from a policy standpoint, but making that extension today, I think, will help people go a long way. We're always looking and always taking inventory of programs at HUD to see how we can better serve people.
So the idea of no interest loans is something you're considering but haven't decided on yet?
Well, it's something that we have to look into. Yeah. You know, that was brought to us. You know, there's other agencies and Congress, as I said, that have to be involved. We're going to look at every solution, possible solution, to see if we can be a help and a support.
And in terms of help on homelessness, I know in the previous administration there was a lot of a push for vouchers for people here. Do we need more vouchers? What do you think about that?
Well, I'm a stewardship person. Yeah. We had a great meeting today with some of the leadership here in L.A. and L.A. County. I think we need to take inventory. One thing that I do emphasize, we have to maximize the budget that we do have and make sure that from a voucher standpoint, from a resource standpoint, that we're using these to serve the people that we've been called to serve in the best way, most efficient from a stewardship standpoint. And so all of those things are being looked at.
Two quick questions to wrap things up.
Okay.
This is our opportunity to get to know you a little bit. You've got an amazing life story.
Thank you.
Spending time in the NFL, played for the Redskins, the Chargers, the Broncos. But the way you started your life is something you preach about a lot. And the value of hard work, and your father taught you about that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, you know, hard work, I think it's dignified. You know, and my father and my mother, albeit that their relationship, their marriage was broken, two things that I took from my parents. My father taught me how to work very hard, and my mother taught me how to relationship with Christ and to trust in him. And so I always encourage people, no matter what your circumstance is, right, work hard. No matter what your, where you come from, you know, where are you trying to go? Stay focused on that mission, and hard work and resilience, and never give up. You know, I was always told I wouldn't play in the NFL. You're not big enough. You didn't play enough. You know, in college, you didn't have enough experience. There's always going to be a reason why you cannot do something, or an excuse why you cannot do it. But I've always found that if you put your hand to the plow and stay focused, trust the Lord, and work hard, you could do it.
And our last question is something we do called personal issues. It's 30 seconds, rapid fire cultural favorites to get to know you.
All right.
First thing that comes to mind, sort of one word answers. All right,
okay.
Ready?
Yes.
What's your favorite TV show?
You know, I don't watch a lot of TV. I would say Sanford and Son used to be one of my favorites.
Favorite movie of all time?
Passion.
All right. Favorite book?
The Bible.
Good answer. Favorite sports team?
Redskins.
Okay. Favorite current athlete?
Current.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite current athlete would probably be any defensive back in the NFL that plays corner.
Okay. There you go. Any in particular?
All of them.
Okay. Who is your role model?
Well, from a faith standpoint, it was Christ. Mm-hmm. But I've had tremendous role models in my life, from Aeneas Williams to Daryl Green to Tim Johnson. And these men the Lord brought around me, Troy Vincent, at different seasons of my life to teach me and encourage me. And I hope to be that too, you know, for the next generation of leaders.
Secretary Turner, thank you so much for taking time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Secretary Turner, and our thanks as well to Charlie Kirk, and our thanks to you for listening to this edition of The Issue Is. We appreciate it. Next week, Mike Madrid, the former Republican, I guess current Republican, who's done a lot of work against Trump, but also one of the sort of top experts on the Latino vote. He's written books about it. It's his main area of expertise, and he's got some fascinating things to say about that. He'll be with us next week on The Issue Is. Who knows what will happen in the world between now and then. I'm Alex Michelson. Please like, subscribe, connect with us in social media. Really would appreciate it, and hope you have a great week.